Cascadia. Today is Friday, February 12th, 2010, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.fm on the web. And this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
The grand jury found no criminal wrongdoing in the fatal shooting of Aaron Campbell by Portland police officer Ronald Frashore.
Japanese whalers are blubbering because three of their own got hit with rancid butter.
And a month after the earthquake struck Haiti, a day of national mourning.
Portland area weather today, rain, high near 52, south-southeast winds from 9 to 13 miles an hour with gusts to 20 miles an hour. Tonight, showers, cloudy, lows in the mid-40s. Tomorrow, probably more rain. In fact, it's going to rain off and on for the next week with highs in the 50s and lows in the 40s.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Portland's black community expressed serious doubts about the results of a grand jury convened to look into the police shooting of Aaron Campbell. The grand jury did find that Campbell was killed because of critical police errors, including no central command, lack of communication between officers, and training that teaches officers how to shoot without key decision-making skills. But in the end, the jury found no criminal wrongdoing by the officer who fired the fatal shot. The Oregonian called the jury's letter yesterday, quote, a stinging indictment of the police actions that started as a welfare check, close quotes, and ended, of course, with the death of an unarmed, suicidal man. Still, not as stinging by half as being shot in the back.
Close but no cigar. Democratic legislative leaders yesterday crushed Governor Kulongoski's effort to modify the state's controversial kicker law. The gov said the legislature's failure to take up the issue was disappointing and a missed opportunity for the people of Oregon. Senate President Peter Courtney delivered a no-compromise message. The Democratic caucus not only refuses to address kicker reform during the current session, but would refuse to place it on the November ballot even if the governor called him back into special session, as he has threatened to do.
This is one of these below-the-radar stories that we really should be paying more attention to. It's the old story of the fox guarding the hen house. Bart Eberwein, a vice president of Hoffman Construction in Portland, has been appointed to the State Land Conservation and Development Commission. Governor Kulongoski appointed Eberwein to replace Dennis Darby, who completed his second four-year term in December. The Oregon Senate confirmed Eberwein's nomination. He's been involved in construction, wood products, and real estate deal-making for 35 years now, and Eberwein has been vice president at Hoffman since 1988. He's also active on four other volunteer groups, but in the end, Bart Eberwein, vice president of Hoffman Construction, is now in charge of the State Land Conservation and Development Commission.
Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley has endorsed an agreement to share water among fish and farms in the Klamath Basin. Yesterday, Merkley said he supports a basin-wide restoration agreement and a companion deal that could lead to the removal of four dams on the Klamath River. This comes as environmental groups, irrigators, tribes, and local governments continue to square off over the dam and water agreements. This week, the group Friends of the River and the Hoopa tribe said they won't endorse the deals. However, the governors of Oregon and California, the Obama administration, numerous tribes and governments, and an array of irrigation and conservation groups continue to support the plan.
Here at Air Cascadia on Fridays, we always like to bring our listeners up to speed on the week's LNG developments. Last Sunday in Connecticut, an explosion at a natural gas plant claimed the lives of five workers and seriously injured another 12. We're told it can't happen here, but why take that risk when you don't need the power? Olivia Schmidt is Columbia Riverkeeper and the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club joins us to talk LNG. Good morning, Olivia.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So this week there have been developments on the LNG front. You want to let our listeners know what's been going on?
Yeah, well, you know, for years now, Oregonians all over the state have been facing the threat of eminent domain for LNG-related pipelines. And as a result of the painfully dismissive and really abusive misconduct of the Oregon LNG company that's proposing an LNG terminal on the mouth of the Columbia River and then a 100-mile pipeline through the Willamette Valley, after years of abuse and misconduct and complaints by landowners and Oregon's elected officials, FERC has called an investigation of the conduct of that company. They'll be holding town halls. They haven't been scheduled yet, but over the past 2 weeks, landowners and concerned citizens have been submitting comments about their experiences in dealing with those companies, including specific examples of misconduct on the part of the company. In a surprising move earlier this week, Oregon LNG submitted a comment to FERC requesting that the town halls be canceled, saying that the claims of landowners who have, you know, dozens of witnesses at tours for these pipelines for their claims are unsubstantiated, and that the town hall that will be scheduled to allow landowners to discuss their concerns about the company and to air their complaints about misconduct and abuses by the company, coercive statements, and, you know, basically violating agreements, that would be a hostile forum for the Oregon LNG company to walk into. The irony of that statement does not escape anyone who's been dealing with this issue, where every time that we go into a hearing with the federal agency responsible for the initial siting process of these terminals and the companies themselves, it is a very hostile environment for the landowners facing eminent domain for these projects. So, you know, it's just another example of this LNG company, you know, trying to do whatever they can to escape the scrutiny of a public that is very engaged in this issue and concerned about what happens in our state.
And of course, when we come right down to it, eminent domain was originally intended to be for the benefit, for public benefit, for the good of people in a particular area, not for the benefit of out-of-state corporations. That,
right,
again, I mean, the irony, of course.
Yeah, and that's a huge problem with this situation. You know, we know that LNG is not needed in our state. The Oregon Department of Energy found conclusively that we do not need LNG to meet our energy needs, and yet hundreds of, not thousands, of landowners in the state of Oregon are facing eminent domain, or, you know, government-allowed condemnation of their land for the sake of pipelines that have no benefit to the Oregon public. It's really a travesty for the people whose livelihoods would be ruined by this development, and you know, the jobs that would be lost in agriculture, the economic stimulus that those family-owned farms bring to the small communities they live in and to the broader state of Oregon.
And there's no plausible way that eminent domain could be claimed as justification of taking the people's land. That's all we've got time for. My guest has been Olivia Schmidt with Columbia River Keeper and the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club. Thanks so much for that, Olivia.
Thank you.
At the Clean Energy Natural Gas Plant in Middleton, Connecticut last Sunday, an explosion left 5 people dead and 12 seriously injured. The site's being treated as a crime scene. And now it's emerged that no local or state fire safety official was present at the purging of the natural gas pipeline that preceded the blast. Even though combustion engineers say purging or cleaning of high-pressure gas lines is the most dangerous operation at a gas-fired power plant, there's no law or code that requires a fire or building official to be on the scene. Spokesman for the International Code Council, which advises governments and organizations on safety standards, said the clean energy tragedy has raised new concerns about the purging and venting of natural gas lines.
Well, they only said it was clean. They never said it was safe, did they? Now we go to Vancouver, British Columbia, for an update on the resistance to the 2010 Olympic Games that are starting any minute now in Vancouver. Amidst the absence of snow, the threat of gun-shy contractors pulling out if they don't get paid, injured athletes in a moribund economy, the games go on. And that's to say nothing, of course, of massive protests and police intimidation. That's exactly what mainstream media has done. It said nothing. My guest this morning is Harsha Walia with the Olympic Resistance. Good morning, Harsha.
Morning. Sorry, Justine, I only have a couple minutes.
Busy day today for you. Can you let us know what's going on there in Vancouver?
Yes. Today is the opening ceremonies of the Olympics. There's a rally planned at 3 o'clock, and actually we just had a rally that just ended about 5-10 minutes ago against the Olympic torch coming through the downtown east side, which is Vancouver's poorest neighborhood, and there was hundreds of people who showed up and blocked the torch, and the torch was forced to be rerouted.
And has anyone from a mainstream media outlet, Fox and the likes of that, contacted you or interviewed you or shown any interest in reporting on the resistance?
Yeah, there's a fair amount of international media actually interested in the story. We have Associated Press, We have NBC, you know, and they're all here to cover, they're all accredited media who are here to cover the games, but, you know, they're covering the resistance and opposition to the games. I don't know how well, I'm not watching the coverage, but there's a lot of international media interest.
And the police presence, what's that been like today?
It's been quite intense. The horses were out, the police were out in full force, but, you know, we managed to block the torch. And sorry, I'm really sorry, but I do have to go. My mind keeping through. We have a bunch of legal defense going on.
So, do you have one more minute to tell us about the
numbers?
Okay, well, thank you so much for that.
Thank you very much.
My guest has been Harsha Walia with the 2010 Olympics Resistance.
Three crew members of a Japanese whaling vessel suffered face and eye injuries from acid fired by anti-whaling protesters during their latest clash in the Antarctic Ocean. The acid turned out to be rancid butter, which, as any home ec major knows, is not a welcome surprise, but nonetheless non-toxic. The Sea Shepherd protesters said they often aim the harmless stuff at the whalers to try to disrupt the annual Japanese hunt. This is the first confrontation this year between Japanese whalers and the Sea Shepherd, although there have been two ship collisions for which each side blamed the other.
It's been a month now since a massive earthquake accompanied by many aftershocks devastated Haitian capital Port-au-Prince and neighboring towns around the region. Today, the president, René Préval, has called for a day of national mourning. At least 217,000, and that's a very low number, 217,000 people died in the January quake, which left 300,000 plus injured and a million homeless. A prayer service is also held at the site of a mass grave outside the capital, which is believed to hold tens of thousands of victims. Later, at the exact time that the earthquake hit, Haitians at home and abroad will be asked to kneel and pray.
This has been Air Cascadia for Friday, February 12, 2010. Engineering is
Todd Wilson.
Todd. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. Chris Andre is the producer. I'm Liam Delta.
You've been listening to News and Comment from Air Cascadia on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, KBOO on the web. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Now stay tuned for Flashpoints. Kevin Pina from Haiti as the rains begin. Andres Contreras talks about his months with the President Zelaya in the Brazilian embassy in Honduras.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support, and have a good day.